Hello and welcome to the Wolves Report. I'm Ryan Lester and thank you for joining us for episode 92, where tonight we'll give our match and player analysis from Wolves' fine, gutsy 2-1 win over Fulham. We'll take your questions, look ahead to Wolves' FA Cup quarter-final against Coventry. Also, I cannot do this show with my full voice lasting the whole show, as we know, but more importantly than my voice are my two midfield generals, in form of Chris Tyler and Mark Nock. Unbelievably, at the start of every show, my voice seems to wobble and I don't know why. It sounds like I'm really emotional, but I'm not. Well, not as emotional as Saturday anyway, but Chris, you were at Molineux on Saturday. It wasn't pretty, but it was one of the most hearty, gutsy performances we've had at Molineux and enjoyed for a long time.
Oh, you say it wasn't pretty. I think it was glorious. I'm running out of words for this team because I keep writing them off. And they keep coming back and making me look stupid, and I absolutely love it. Saturday for me was my favourite Wolves game, probably since the Nuno era. I absolutely loved it. And like you say, not for the quality on show or, you know, some of the stuff we've seen over the years, but just the desire and the passion and will to win. And I can't remember a performance from Wolves that had that for recent years. And I think when the players went off first half, I'm sort of thinking, just get to half time. And then at half time, I'm thinking, you know, can we steal a point here? Can we nick a draw? Can we keep a clean sheet? Can we take a 0-0? That'd be a good result. The way they came out second half was incredible. And that's just players that are bought into their manager. And I know me and Nocky have said some stupid things on this podcast this year in regards to players and managers. But if ever you needed a team to show that they were all behind their manager, that was that performance. Lamina will come on to, but I've not seen a performance like that before. That was a joke. Aiton Ori's got man of the match, but for me, Lamina was head and shoulders the best player on the pitch. I've not seen a player playing three or four different positions and excelling all of them before. I've not seen that. Just good. I mean, I've written Toti off a million times. He was outstanding. His composure for the first goal was just brilliant. If that was Sarabia or Neto, we're waxing lyrical about it. I honestly came away from that game prouder than I can remember, genuinely. It was that good. My favourite game in a long time.
Nocky, I mean, opened up brilliant by Tyler there. I think we all felt the same, didn't we? We've talked about sexy football and long passes and back heels and great goals and Ruben Neves magic. But Saturday we needed to do something different that we probably didn't have fully in the locker, considering we're four forwards down. As Tyler said, it was a performance that, I mean, I've watched the highlights back so many times. The tackles, the way the crowd knew. I mean, just taking it back, Nocky, to when Neto went off against Newcastle. Earlier in the season when he pulled his hamstring and it just went flat. The reverse happened in this game. And it's like the fan base knew they're going to need us now. And everyone was up for it.
Yeah. Look, I think as Wolves fans, we're realistic. We know where we are. And all we want to see from our team is 100% effort and commitment. And they're going to get backed if they do that. And I think Chris articulated it perfectly. I couldn't have been any more proud coming out of that stadium. It was really an emotional experience to see the way they performed and what they put into that game. And look, it's very easy to get up for games against City, Tottenham, Chelsea, the teams like that. It's easy to get up for those kind of games when you've got a Fulham coming. And no disrespect to Fulham, they're in a similar position to we are. But if you're going to get a ticket for a Wolves game, you want to bring your kids with you, you're probably going to be able to get one for a Fulham, a Sheffield United, someone like that, whereas you're not going to really get them for a Man City game. So when you see that level of commitment against a team who aren't a fashionable team, but you see the effort, the work rate to get through all that adversity. I mean, we had Aiton Ori played left back, left wing back. He was on the right at one point. He played up front. Lamina played in two or three different positions. Everyone was fluid and there was no hint of complaint. There was no hint of moaning. There was no strops. I don't know if you saw the game yesterday when Sterling came off and there was toys coming out. De Bruyne came off, toys coming out. Everyone was on the same page. It was just utterly fantastic to see such a team spirit. I was worried about the game going into it before we even lost Bellegarde. And, you know, you're giving it a half time. I'm similar. I'm thinking, can we scrape a 0-0 out of this? Can we keep it low if they do get one? But to come out with that level of intent and that level of passion and desire, and then for the crowd to react the way they did, it just felt like the old Molineux. It felt like the Molineux of the days when we were coming back through the leagues, and it felt like real good times, and it was loud, it was vicious, it was horrible, and it felt a lot like that against Fulham. It was just such a nice feeling to be in the stadium for that. It was just, you know, I can't praise them enough. And as Chris said, we said some stuff about the team that we were wrong about, but you know, I could never be more happy to be wrong in my life.
Chris, we've talked about special eras and how good it was under Nuno, and I know people have been making comparisons to the midfield too, but different times, different players, different styles. But the one thing that is definitely the same is the buy-in from the fans and the players and the manager. I don't recall Wolves ever being on this much of the same page until Pete Nuno. And that's not an easy thing to say, because that was the greatest few years we've all experienced of supporting Wolves. Great football, fantastic footballers. Wolves probably won't get seventh this year, but the achievements for me this season are as good as anything I've witnessed for a long time. From the circumstances we're given at the start of the season, to be fighting for survival, to be in an FA Cup quarterfinal, to be still in the chat with finishing seventh or eighth, it feels like a new era of success for Wolves coming in again.
Yeah, Molineux was bouncing, wasn't it? And that second half, like you've just said, it was a collective. It was the crowd as well. The crowd got, I'd argue the crowd got the players over the line to a point. They were outstanding. I've not really, yeah, you're right, since probably Pete Nuno, not seen Molineux like that. And we've all talked about, haven't we, Wolves are better when the chips are down, when we're the underdog, when we've got to fight for something. And it brings us all together for some reason. And that was the game. I mean, yeah, Fulham aren't peak Barcelona, don't get me wrong. They're a neat and tidy team. They lacked a cutting edge. On another day, they probably could have been 2 or 3 nil up, if we're brutally honest. But what we did was we realised, hang on a minute, we've got to half-time, it's 0-0. Let's go and win this game. Let's not take a point. And us three were so critical of the Nuno era, the Bruno era, to a point where we'd have tried to play for a point on Saturday. He went to win the game second half. He went to win that game. He pushed Lamina further forward out Norrie. He wasn't happy with the point. And I love that in my manager. And you're going to win. You're going to lose a lot of games because of it. You know, I went to Newcastle. It was disgusting. I never wanted to watch a game of football again in my life. But a week later, I'm back on cloud nine and wins the next game. And that's what football does to you. But I think Ben Husband came on, didn't he, probably months ago now, and he said, this Wolves team are going to lose football games because of how we play. And we do. We get beat. But you games like that on Saturday make it all worthwhile. And yeah, like I said at the start, just it's as good as I can remember, to be honest.
Just a couple of pointers feeding off Chris's excellent comments there, Nocky. Just take our minds back to Craven Cottage. I was still angry about it a lot before the game. We had the penalty that wasn't. Tim Ream should have been sent off for a second yellow card for Huang's penalty. And when that player's put his head in Kilman's face. So by the letter of the law, there was a massive injustice. And I felt like, obviously, we settled a score, but I felt like the players wanted to prove something as well. And whether that's in their mindset or they've been cheated or not, but one, some justice has been done, but it felt like those players really wanted to prove a point, and they won that battle everywhere on the pitch.
Yeah, it was quite poetic that it came off Tom Kearney's backside, to be honest, because rather than talking out of it, he contributed a goal out of it, because some of the stuff he did when we were down at Fulham was pretty atrocious. Wow.
Mark, not ladies and gentlemen, outstanding, mate.
He's had that ready since Saturday, hasn't he?
It was horrible what happened to us down there, but there's been times when Wolves have been a bit soft. You know, we saw it maybe against Brentford. We saw it against Brentford a couple of seasons ago when they did the same thing to us. Whereas now we've got a little bit, we seem to be learning, and that's the biggest thing that you can probably say about this team. We learn when things go wrong. We don't tend to repeat the same mistakes. We seem to adapt to it. And I thought physically we were very strong against Fulham. And yes, they're a good side going forward. They had some lovely moments. They had times where they opened us up very easily. I don't think the formation helped us. I think the four at the back kind of hindered us with hitting us down the flanks. There was a lot of space for them to play into. The two centre-backs were too wide as a result of that formation. And, you know, it was a quite simple ball through the middle that were hurting us, and they didn't finish him. But he learnt on that at half-time. He made the little switches, made the little changes. We became more solid, and we grew into the game. So we lose football matches, every team lose football matches, but it's how you react and respond to those defeats. And when you've got the ability to realise that actually this isn't working, I need to change it. And it seems like, it sounds a very simple process to think that, but there's so many managers, and we've seen it so many times, where it's, no, this is my formation, this is what we're going to play, win or lose, we're going to do it this way. It's just lovely to have a manager that looks at it and thinks, you know what, no, this doesn't work, I'm going to try something a bit different. And to have the players who are so fluid as well and can play in different positions. I mean, granted, it's kind of, we had to, we didn't have a lot of choice because we were running out of players, but everyone's on board, everyone's moving in the right direction. And you know, we've waxed lyrical about Gary O'Neill the past few weeks, and every single part of that is completely valid because of what he's done to this club. And you can't overstate the achievement compared to where we were when he came in, and the amount of players we've lost, what we had coming in. It was horrible. I think we were all kind of thinking we're going to move in only one direction. So to be where we are now, to have matched last season's points tally, you know, potentially staring down the barrel of an FA Cup semi-final if we can get past Coventry and still in the mix for Europe. If he's not manager of the season, then something's gone badly wrong for me.
Yeah, it is absolutely crazy, isn't it? It's such a good time to be a Wolves fan. And these are conversations at the start of the season when you're planning your podcast, and it could be a long old podcast season, 17th, 18th. It's going to be tough, but it's been absolutely dreamy. And the credit to Gary, credit to the whole squad and everyone for buying into what they're doing. It's just so enjoyable. And as Chris said at the start, it feels special now, because when you can, I'm not going to say they're bludgeoning their way to victory, but Wolves weren't getting beat Saturday. And you know what? We may have rode our luck a little bit, but how much bad luck have we had earlier in the season? You look at that, and maybe it is leveling it out, but just the way they're performing for their manager and the fans are on board with it. I mean, who knows? We may finish 12th and we may only get another round in the FA Cup. Who knows? But let's enjoy it for now. And it's good to be a Wolves fan again. It feels like everyone's proud. And coming out the ground, everyone just, you could see. It was different, wasn't it, guys? I don't know. You kept coming out, you could see people were just buzzing, and it was just like, oh, I really enjoyed that, because you could see the guts from it. But before I get carried away and just start singing all night, let's talk about the goals. That first goal, the touch, I think it was a clipping knocky from Sarabia. I don't know if it was Bassi that flicked, he didn't quite go out, but Toti's first touch of control, and like, there's no way, I was not expecting that, and the rollback. I mean, look at Tyler's face, he can't believe it, but that touch. The touch from Toti and the rollback.
Not bad for a wardrobe, is it?
Incredible. But Noki, talk me through that goal. And as well, I want to know about here, the noise for that goal when it went in was incredible as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe you look at Toti, you look at his gait, you look at the way he runs, and you think he's clumsy. He's a really good footballer. He's got a fantastic touch.
Touch was a joke. He's trapped the ball in one movement and rolled it back.
Midfielders, we've got attackers who slash at that. They have a little pop at goal. To have the presence of mind to control the ball, look, see Ait Nouri and put it absolutely perfectly on a plate for him, and for Ait Nouri to tuck it away. It was just absolutely fantastic. And it was nice, because we were right in a full round of Gary O'Neill's Barmy Army, and then the celebrations went up. Then we're back to Gary O'Neill's Barmy Army. It's just a continuous element of support. And the players score, and Totti's running to the South Bank, Ait Nouri's off, he's running there as well. The celebrations were just absolutely fantastic, because I think it was a game that we knew was going to get away from us, really, because of the everything that had happened with the injuries and the lineup that we were able to put out. So to get yourself in front and then follow it on after that was just fantastic. It was really good scene. And as I said at the start, I was more proud of that victory than I was of beating City and beating Spurs, because it is easy to get up for those kind of games. These are the games that you get a bloody nose from.
Really.
And we struggled on because you haven't got the. It's harder to get up from as a player, and they're only human beings. Yes, they're professional footballers, but they're human beings. If you've got De Bruyne and Haaland and players like that, you're going to give it an extra 10-15%. Whereas these games, to be that committed, absolutely outstanding.
You are listening and watching episode 92 of the Wolves Report. Thank you to those who've joined us for the live show. I can see lots of good comments coming through Facebook, Twitter and YouTube. Feel free to join the conversation, comment on the game, comment on the podcast, drop some insults. They're all welcome. Any good stuff, we'll get them up there. And also thank you to those who are listening back on catch up as well across Facebook, YouTube, Twitter and Spotify. Tyler, that wasn't the end of the goal scoring for Wolves. The second goal was a slight bit of fortune again, but the build up to that goal for me was fantastic. All started with João Gomes trapped in the corner and off he went. Chris Tyler.
Yeah, luckily right in front of me and my lad, we were Steve ball over. And I mean, I said last season, those two in midfield are limited. And I was talking about Lamina and Gomes. And then you've got Lamina that goes and plays in four different positions and Gomes who's turned into like, you know, peak Patrick Vieira, hasn't he? But the little turn to get away from, he almost dragged the two players in. He knew exactly what he was doing and then turned, bang, gone. But then it's that composure then to play the right pass and that's what was the best bit. And I'd argue, I think we had a bit of a chat about it, Fraser and Sarabia for me were probably our two weakest players, but they've both impacted the game with the goals. And Fraser, fair play to him, he worked so hard. He got put the cross in, the back heel. I mean, it's lucky it took the deflection, so I think Samedo was going to hit the corner flag, wasn't it? But like Nocky said, it's poetic justice in a way, isn't it? If you believe in karma, that was it, wasn't it? It was that goal. And, you know, we've been talking about Samedo, can he get his stats and his numbers up? I thought he was outstanding as well on Saturday, yeah. To be fair. Absolutely outstanding. Both sides, defensively and attacking. And it's nice for him to get, although we didn't get credited with the goal, I think it's nice for him to get that moment. And
he's got his song as well now. And it's simple, but it's good. And the fans have bought into it. And I know Nelson has really split the fan base. And I know, Tyler, we laugh about that the chap that was sat behind us at Brentford that didn't really like Nelson at all. But he has been one of Wolves' most consistent performers. Since the turn of the new year, he has been outstanding.
And I don't think he's necessarily split the fan base. I think, unfortunately, he came with a £37 million price tag. And Wolverhampton Wanderers fans aren't used to players rocking up at that sort of money. So you're expecting big things, aren't you? And it's taken him a bit of time to settle, but I mean, defensively superb. And the way he's got the composure, he's happy to receive the ball, deep positions, play off it, beat his man, pass it. Outstanding. Like, I couldn't fault the guy. And like I said, it's just nice for him to get the goal. And like you said, the celebration again was massive, wasn't it? It was so pivotal in the way they were trying to get the crowd going. And they knew they needed the crowd to see them over the line. And like I said, it was a real team effort. And Gomes, Fraser and Samedo, big credit for that goal.
One thing I think needs to be talked about soon as well. I believe Nelson Samedo now is probably in the last 17, 18 months of his contract. And for me, a conversation needs to be had because I know Nelson's probably around 30 now. Maybe someone can tell me his exact age, but he's about 30. He's took a while to settle, but if he's happy here, I want a conversation. Footballers aren't old at 30, 31 anymore. You get the best players or good players playing well into their 30s. For me, that's a conversation that needs to be had because this is defensively with the ball and now he's getting involved at the far end of the pitch as well. Surely it's got to be worth a conversation. I don't know if everyone agrees on the chat or you think not, but it's a big piece of money to replace Nelson Samedo to go like for like quality. Going on to the goal that we conceded, I think Fulham probably did deserve to score a goal.
Yes,
yeah, but I'm not sure we could have done much at the end. I'll go with Nocky on that one because I think Tyler's made his mind up on that one. But keepers made
it. It's Alex Iwobi, isn't it? Alex Iwobi had to score.
If you've not bet Alex Iwobi to score any time at like at 2-1, you know what? Let's just move on. Right, let's go through. honestly, I can't bear looking at Tyler's face when he's not got his own way. It upsets me.
But he's right. He's one of those players. Honestly, he's absolute pants, isn't he? He's a terrible player. He plays against us and he gets one sniff and he turns into Messi. He just seems to do it every time he plays. He just seems to find the back of the net. He's just one of them players. It used to happen with Johan Elmander as well. He turned into Ronaldo when he played against us. I remember Wayne Allison every time we played against Swindon, he used to bang in a winner. Some players just have clubs they can play against and he's just one of them that we just seem to suit the way he plays. To be fair, he took it well as well. It's frustrating.
Apparently, he created six big chances, which is like a record. It's incredible, like you said, how he just does it consistently against Wolves. It's bonkers.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. I mean, he did put a good through ball through earlier on in the game as well. And for whatever reason, I think I spoke to Ewan Roberts before Black Country Derby, and he said there's no real science behind it, but some players just have teams they love playing against, and it works for them. And it feels like it's Alex Iwobi. Just breaking away before we go into the player ratings. Martin Wright says, did Nocky get into the Billy Wright stand as I've seen him being turned away? No, we can't for legal reasons talk about Nocky's batting order, but I do hope it's been lifted. Nocky, can you advise us and have you watching through the turnstile gate?
Yeah, no, I moved into the Billy Wright for this one and I tried to get in the wrong gate because them like print yourself tickets. What a joke they are. It doesn't tell you exactly where you're supposed to go in. It's all right, shambles. But actually, where I was sat was really good spot because right behind, I was right on the
lower seat. You could see. There we
at
go.
The back. And behind me was Nelson Semedo's box and then next to it was Matheus Cunha's box. And when we scored the first goal, did a little look in the box and Cunha was going absolutely ballistic and he wasn't for show because he was inside the box and he was jumping around, he was celebrating and Nelson Semedo's wife was sat in the box next to us and she was crying her eyes out when he scored and she started singing his song when the South Bank had finished. It showed you how tight they are to the club, I think. And when you talk about Semedo with a new contract, I don't see any reason that we shouldn't be pushing for that because it feels like he's happy here. And I think he's scandalously underrated for what he delivers at Wolves.
Can I just say the best part about Saturday was I rang Nocky on the way to the game. Yeah, I'm in the steeple, mate. I'll come and meet you for a pint. So I'm in the steeple, though. I'm ringing him, texting him, waiting for him to turn up. Yeah, I'm in jail, mate. Where are you? Oh, yeah, sorry, mate. I'm in the Billy Wright stand.
I got the wrong turnstile and the wrong stand.
He couldn't have been any further away from me if he were tried.
Incredible. There you go, Martin. Detailing to Nocky's banning order being rescinded, which is nice to hear. Moving on to the team and someone else, Tyler, who probably split some of the fan base, but recently his form's got good. I think Cutler's the new goalkeeper coach, isn't he? So I think he's got some credit to take for that. But Jose Sarr was a big reason why Wolves went on Saturday. One of the big reasons.
Yeah. He still couldn't kick for Toffee, could he? But his saves were outstanding. The first half early on, he tipped one round the post. I mean, second half, he made three or four really good saves. You know, not just standard saves, very good saves. And that was the Sarr that we want to see week in, week out, isn't it? We want to see that. And I think O'Neill said he's almost not been overworked this season, as he's had to make the odd save here and there. But he was called upon on Saturday quite a lot and he responded brilliantly. And the save where he tipped it and then Kilman headed it off the line was brilliant. The one from Adama was a strong save. He still kicked it out of play a couple of times for no apparent reason. But I think we've probably got to accept that's that's the sort of goalkeeper we've got now, isn't it? But it was one of his better games for a while. I thought he was very good. And good 8 out of 10 from me. Kept us in the game at 0-0.
Absolutely. Nocky started off with a back four. So the starting pair as the two centre-backs was Maximilian Kilman and the outstanding Santiago Bueno.
Yeah, I've been banging the drum for Bueno for a few weeks because I just think he looks the part. He just looks a player for me. And obviously, you don't want players to get injured, but he does give other players opportunities. So with Dawson being out, he gave him a chance to come in. And I thought he was superb. I thought he was really strong. He was cultured. He was clever on the ball. He was good in possession. He never looked under any threat. I don't think you can blame me, the centre-backs, for the goal. I think it's a couple of good balls in the box and a decent flick to finish it. So I think he was really strong. Kilman the same. I thought he had an excellent game. They seemed to work together really well. They seemed to bounce off each other well. They were better when we moved away from kind of a rigid four at the back because there was a little bit too much space between them because of the way Fulham were attacking us. So we're kind of pulling fullbacks across slightly, and that was just pulling a centre half over as well. So there was a little bit too much space to play in. But when we sort of made a couple of little tactical changes, that's when they really came into their own and they looked very, very solid. It was two good performances. I think it'd be very harsh now for Bueno to lose his shirt.
One thing about Santiago as well, just before, it wasn't in the same period of play, but at the end of the game to make it 3-0. Santiago Bueno was the highest man up.
Yeah, now, incredible.
I don't know if anyone remembers back, but when Ait Nouri was God knows where Aitnori was playing, but he came in from the right-hand side. He played the through ball for Lamina. He probably should have left it for Sarabia, who could have squared for Santiago Bueno. But I don't know any point in time when your centre-back is in the centre-forwards position when you're 2-0 up in the 88th minute. That's something I've not seen, but I'm all for it. And if we're risk and reward football, that absolutely kills the game, doesn't it? Even though I think the game was probably won then. But it did amuse me when watching the highlights that the centre-back in the, having a game in the Premier League, he's up in the number nine position.
He's going to be a really good player, he's going to be a steal at the price that we paid for him. He's just got everything from what I can see of him. And I know it's early days, but what you want in a centre-half, he's got all of it. So I think if we manage him well and he does, you know, he keeps growing the way he is, I think he's going to be an absolutely outstanding player for us.
Tyler, it wasn't always four at the back. It went to five, and the centre-back that changed the shape was Toto. Now, we all laughed and joked, but...
I'm glad you gave him Toto.
Yeah, well, I've done it on purpose, didn't I? I mean, he didn't want me to talk about the Fulham goal, so we can have Toto and have some of that.
Outstanding.
Wow.
I mean, I still technically can't watch him play football. I still sometimes look at my...
That's so confusing.
I still sometimes look at the price of the tickets and think, how am I paying this to watch him play football? But you know what? I'm falling in love with him. It's ridiculous. And
what a turnaround.
If there was someone that you wanted to face up to a Dharma, jokes aside, for that half an hour, it was Toto Gomez.
In our squad, it would be him, yeah.
Because he's physical, he's quick, he's awkward, he's gangly, he's lanky, he's everything that a Dharma probably doesn't want that player to be. And like I said, jokes aside, his two touches for the goal were superb. It's a touch with the right foot and a pass with the left, and it's a goal. I'll criticise people when they do it, but it's hard to criticise him. I mean, you can't criticise him on Saturday. He was outstanding. And I think we just look so much more comfortable when the three of them are there. Yeah. And I know it's not always a back three in the wing. You know, it's very fluid. It's very hybrid. But we just look a better team when we've got the three centre-halves there. And that was nothing against the first half. But like Nocka said, Fulham did get a lot of space and a lot of good opportunities in that first half while we were back four. And we just looked more settled. And whether he brings that to us, I don't know. But we've talked about it before. Santi, Max, Dawson, solid. But none of them have got a touch of pace and enough recovery. And he brings that to the team. And
yeah, he's the get-out clause for the ball over the top, isn't he?
And the passion as well. Fair play to him. I think he probably knows he's not the best footballer in the world, but he makes up for it with other stuff. And the passion for the goals was brilliant to see. And he's obviously loved by his teammates and his manager, so fair play to him.
Absolutely. Mentioning on the passion, it was great to see his celebration when he set up the goal and he's double pumping, fist pumping the South Bank and absolutely loving it. So, you want to see players enjoy their moments. And not only that, and we've talked about it a lot, but his inclusion frees up Ryan Aitnori to do whatever he wants to do because you've got someone that you can trust, even though sometimes you see him at the end of the game bombing down the left-hand side as well. Moving on to the wing-backs, Nocky. I mean, they were that good. I think you should have one each. Nocky, tell me about Ryan Aitnori.
It's considering we were trying to offload him last season. It's
No offence to Cresswell, but that would have been a bad swap.
That kid is incredible, isn't he? I mean, there was, I think it was in the first half where he skipped past a player, he skipped past another player, and then he got taken out. His footwork is incredible, and when he was took it to the corner in injury time as well. The speed of his feet, it's utterly fantastic. And I think you're almost in a little bit of a quandary with what you do with him because he's a really good wing back. But I do think he gives us something in the attacking areas. He's got the ability to get you into the area and he's just a really, really good player. I think he's quick, he's intelligent. He's last couple of seasons, he's maybe not used the ball in the right way. He's maybe had a little bit raw, a little bit rash with his decision-making, whereas he doesn't really seem to give it away now. He's always got a bit of direction to what he's doing as a purpose to the balls that he's playing. And he just seems to be all-round developing into a really strong footballer. And I think we need to get him a new contract as quick as we possibly can because there's going to be people looking at him because there's not many better left-sided wing-backs in the division than him at the moment with the way that he's playing. And it's, you know, I'm running out of things to say about him, to be honest, because he's that impressive and he's hardworking, he's up and down and he gets a lot of cramp, we know that, but he never stops grafting.
Yeah, I actually think the freedom that he's been given has allowed him, because when you've got a play, you want the players to play to their strengths. So, and him with the ball running at people, not often people cut inside onto their weaker foot is a strength, but the way he does it, he's not afraid to go inside every single time. And he's just, he's just an absolute joy.
But O'Neill's letting him do it, isn't he? That's the difference. He's not being shackled. He's not being stuck in a position. He's almost gone and told him to just go and express yourself. And he's talked before about these little messy runs that he goes on. And that's so important that your manager's talking about that in the media, encouraging you to go and do that and just go and be the footballer that you want to be. And that's such a big pat on the back for a player when you know you've got your manager's backing and the fans love him. And he just feels like one of them players who just keeps improving.
Steve Dickens has put a point up there. We need to buy out his 50% contract at Manchester
quick as we can.
I'm not sure if the deal we have is it's 50% of the profit. So I'm not sure if it's 50% ownership. I mean, I may be wrong, but someone corrected me on that a couple of months ago. I believe we bought him for the 10 million, and then they get half of the profit onwards. And we have to buy that out. So, thanks for your comments. And thank you for all the comments. It's some great stuff. Dave Warkind, watching from Australia as well. Tyler, we've talked about him already, but he deserves a mention himself. Nelson Semedo. The only thing he did wrong was get booked for trying to come back on the pitch. I mean, considering some of the tackles that were going on in that game that got unpunished. But Nelson puts steps on the one foot on the pitch and he gets booked for it. But other than that, which is a bit harsh, he was outstanding.
Yeah, we probably won't cover the ref, and that's probably a good thing because, again, just another joke of a referee performance. But, yeah, Semedo is hitting those levels now week in, week out. And I think that's all we've been asking for, isn't it, over however many shows we've done, 92. We've always known there's a top player in there. It's just, can he keep his consistency? Can he keep his head? Can he keep his composure defensively? And he's doing it both ways now. He's starting to do it. That's what we were talking about. And it's only the same without Norway. It all comes from O'Neill. I think Greg said, you know, what Gary's done with the players is he's giving them that freedom. Aitnori, Semedo, Gomez, Lamina, you can tell they've been given a freedom to play. They haven't got any shackles. And he was outstanding. And I mean, how many wingers have got the better of him this season? Can't think of too many.
Wolves haven't really been pinned back and pumped by anybody. I mean, Jose Sarr, what we've mentioned earlier on, he hasn't really been worked. But the shape of the team and what they're doing, no one's really pumped or targeted one of our players, have they?
No, he's just confident. That I think there was a bit where we had it right by our corner flag and he sort of beat a couple of players in. Then he's in the centre midfield position and then he's passing it to the left back. And it's just nice to see. And I know they can't do it week in, week out, but they're starting to set a bar for themselves now. Semedo, Aitnori. They're showing how good they are. And there have been people on Twitter who've said who are better right back and left back than him. And it's hard to think of any. And I'm not saying that with the Wolves head on, because you know me, I'll knock a player in no time. It's hard to think of better fullbacks and wing backs than those two. It really is.
Yeah, they are. They're both at their peak of their Wolves career performances. So far, by mile. And again, if you've been given freedom to play, and everyone's enjoying it, they all know their job. The people, there's no sulking when Bueno didn't come in the team. If he's out the team, when people come on as a sub, there's no strops being subbed on or off. Everyone's at it. It's a team. It's a squad name game now. If we're using 15, 16 players a game, so be it. Everyone's in it. So while we're on to that, moving on to the midfield, I'm not going to go on to Neto or Bellegarde because they didn't get enough of a game. But we'll stay away from that. We don't know the outcome of that yet, although I don't think it looks particularly great. But let's talk about Tyler. Tell me about Joe Gomez and Mario Lamina. That's a succulent section for you there, fella.
It'll have to be one each. You can't give me both. all I'd like to say about Lamina is that the highest praise I can give him, and I spoke to Nocky and his old man after the game, and Nocky's old man's been going to Molineux since what they were formed in 1877. And we both agreed. I can't remember a better individual performance than that. I genuinely can't think of one. And what I mean by that is somebody that's played centre midfield, left wing, left 10, striker. He's probably played four positions and he's been outstanding in all four of them. Fulham couldn't live with him.
Yeah,
the guy's an absolute machine. I called him limited like last season when he was in the J-League. And that's because a bit like what I've just said, that, you know, he was clearly given a job last season under Pettigrew to be a defensive holding midfielder. But look at what he's got. He's so good. The flicks, the skills, he looks like he can score a goal, heading, the guy's got everything, like genuinely got everything. And there's not much more you can say about him, but that was genuinely the best individual performance I've seen from a Wolves player, I think.
Yeah,
you saying he was limited last season. He was stifled last season. This is very similar to Ait Nouri. Ait Nouri's, you know, you stay in that position. Lamina wanted to stay there, and he did a smashing video with a young lad, and he was talking about I get the ball and I pass it.
He's not
doing that this season. He's doing more. I mean, I'm in love with the guy. It's a good job you can only see the top half of me, because I'm really excited at the moment just talking about Mario Lamina. I just think he's just a phenomenal player. And we had a discussion actually when Chris phoned us up about, would you swap prime Moutinho and Neves for Lamina and Gomez at the moment?
It's a horrible conversation.
And it's the way they are at the minute. The fact
it's even a conversation tells us how well those pair are playing. Now,
because Neves is the best player I've ever seen at Wolves, there's no question about that. But what works better? Because the way we play now allows so much more fluidity.
Yeah, well, it's different. We probably couldn't play with Neves and Moutinho. We couldn't play that way. But the others probably couldn't have been. Because they're not, although they are playing brilliant, they're not as technically gifted with the ball as the other two. So I don't think it's a fair on, but it's mad that we're having the conversation, but it actually is because of the performances. But Noki, we've got a lot of love for Lamina. He's been fantastic. And it's harsh on João Gomez that he's getting all the Mario's getting all the love, but João Gomez was simply outstanding as well.
He's absolutely incredible. I mean, the turn to set up the second goal when he's on the touchline.
And the pass to Fraser, the vision of that ball.
You're an holding midfielder. What are you doing that out on the left wing? It was absolutely fantastic. But again, we were having conversations last season about him not really improving. He's not really getting any better. Similar to Lamina, similar to Ait Nouri, he was regimented into a position. And it was a means to an end, I think, last season. We needed to get 40 points, we need to get over the line, so we're going to be disciplined. So I get that. But this season, he's had more of a, again, go and express yourself. And we've got central midfielders now who aren't always in central midfield. They will creep off to the left and right wings. They will move into attacking positions. And I think in terms of Gomez's ability, he's a really, really tidy footballer. And again, he's another one that you only see getting better. And he's a prime example that you haven't got to go out there and throw millions and millions of pounds at things. You've just got to do smart business. And the money we've picked him at four, the money we've picked Mario Lamina at four, it's absolute bargains.
All of our better players at the moment have cost us peanuts.
Especially when you're selling
Ryan Ait Nouri, Tommy Doyle, they've cost nothing.
Nunes has covered nearly all of that transfer fee, hasn't he? For nearly all those players, was covered by one player who didn't want to be at the football club. And now you've got this level of commitment, ability and fight in the team as a result of doing a little bit of smart business and coming, dare I say, slightly away from Mendes and doing your own work. And I think it's just, we're reaping the rewards for it now. And, you know, look, we know that with the injuries we've got now, it's going to be a massive challenge to push into the top seven or eight. But for me, if we didn't get another point now, we are above my expectation for where we'd be this season. So I just think it's been a remarkable effort by everyone.
Absolutely. Someone else that came on early on, came on after 11 minutes, Tommy Doyle. Again, someone else that had a really good game. Looked to me, Tyler, like he more came and sat next to João Gomez, that freed up Mario a little bit more. But again, Tommy Doyle, it was a great performance again. Again, probably the most technically gifted with the ball out of the three. But it just worked and he was excellent again.
Is it true that we can buy him for £4
million? £4.5 million. We've got first dibs.
I mean what do you say to that?
I think,
I mean,
John Macken was £5 million when we tried to sign him.
Wow.
20 years ago. It's ridiculous. And this is my point, that we're buying into these players because it's almost like the young and hungry mold again, isn't it? And you know, we don't need to spend big money. You don't need to. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And I'm not, we have a joke, obviously, us three. And what I've said about Lamina and Gomez, Knocker's almost said about Doyle, but like Knocker said, he came on and he just almost controlled the game. He didn't control it from the Lamina's, Gomez, all singing, all dancing, but he was just so quiet in what he did and efficient and neat and tidy. And he recycled the ball and he won it back and he passed it. I mean, £4.5 million, just an absolute joke. It's ridiculous, isn't it? But I like him in a three, and I know we can't always play.
Yeah, I do as well. And I think in one of the games, and it doesn't always work, but I actually like Doyle sitting the deepest so he can collect and get it moving. Yeah. Where the other two, you've got the two pressing monsters. We've seen Joe Gomez's vision. He can get up there when he fed into Fraser. We know Lamine can get up there now. So if it was a 4-3-3, I didn't think it would work. But yeah, I'm delighted to be proven wrong. This manager could tell them these guys to play any formation and they'll do their best and they'll make it work somehow. So, Nocky, last but not least, the pairing of Sarabia and Fraser, probably two of the quieter performance, but they still were both important. Their work rate, their runs to open up the space, Sarabia's quality for the ball, obviously Fraser in the build-up to the second goal as well. So they played their part, but it was a tougher afternoon for them after losing Bellegarde and Neto.
Yeah, I don't think it was one of Sarabia's better games, but I think he knew it wasn't working for him. So he then got back to basics and just did the simple stuff and did it relatively well. And he was involved in the goals as well. So he did his job. He did his job without being one of his stronger games. I think in terms of Fraser, I said last week on the podcast, I think he's got a future in the game. If circumstances were different, I'm pretty sure he'd be somewhere on loan and would be cutting his teeth and learning his trade in the lower leagues, which would be probably the best thing for him at the moment. But he worked his socks off. He put a lot in for the team. He did have an opportunity when he got put through. So he's getting into those spaces. He held the ball up pretty well. And he kind of, I don't want to say sacrificed himself, but he was the linchpin to link it all together up front. He kind of just did the ugly stuff, did the donkey work and let everybody else play, really. So he had a job to do, and he did that job, and he was involved in the second goal, whether it's a deflection or not. It's still his ball across, which has ended up at Gomez's feet. So, you know, did his job, did what he was there to do. And I think there's a very low expectation on him at this moment in time because of his age. Yeah. So he's got the backing of the supporters. We're not expecting him to go out there and score, you know, a couple of goals a game. We're just expecting him to work hard and be a little bit of a pest up there, which is what he's doing. So, yeah, I think he can be proud of his display.
He was a pest, and it was also great to see him celebrate. I know his boyhood team isn't Wolves, but growing up as a youth player in the Wolves Academy, the way he was celebrating those goals on the pitch was like one of us were on there. He was absolutely loving it. So I'm delighted for him, and he did make a difference. It's a big ask for those two, particularly because they're probably not the most mobile as you forward to. So it is a big ask, but Sarabia does have quality, and Fraser put the work in. You're listening to episode 92 of the Wolves Report, club captain Mark Nock, director of football Chris Tyler, and myself, your host, Ryan Lester. We have done 43 minutes on player ratings, the loving for the players, and so we should as well. So we've probably got time for a couple of questions before we move on to the Saturday lunchtime kickoff for a place in the FA Cup semi-final. Right, let's get some questions up, shall we? Now, this has worked out really well. Mike Cannon asks, hope you're a little bit more positive than the last episode. Hey, Mike, I hope you're watching. I hope you're enjoying it.
Which is easy when you haven't been drilled 3-0, isn't it?
Absolutely. But I did
predict to out for 14 hours and lost 3-0.
Understandably, I think Tyler's unhappy approach last week was warranted after we'd only just got home from Newcastle. But yeah, absolutely. And we're all on the high, so why not? Chat about Ryan Aitnori from Dave Butler. Do you expect to see Ryan Aitnori finishing the season in attacking midfielder rather than wing back? For a player struggling to see out 90 minutes not so long ago, he's got one hell of an engine on him now. And that's a great point. This was a guy that couldn't really do two games in a week, could often cramp up. I don't know when he cramped up and Liverpool got the injury time winner and Salah, because Salah had in a kick all game. But Tyler, Ryan Aitnori, I think Nocky mentioned it earlier on, this guy could play. If you give him a free role, he's almost got a free role at left wing back, which doesn't really seem to make any sense. But when you've got Toti there, it gives him the freedom. Go and enjoy it. Go and have some madness, create things. Sooner or later, he's going to do one of them slalom runs and he's going to score a Puskas goal contender.
He is, yeah. But I do keep him where he is. I think me and you picked the same team for Cobb, didn't we? And it's having him still at left wing back and Lamina a bit where he was Saturday as you sort of left number 10. Purely because, yeah, you're right, he's got basically a free role at left wing back as it is. So I like him there because I like him in our half picking the ball up and driving forward as much as I do picking it up in their half, if you know what I mean. Look, his best run on Saturday came when he was left back. He pinged it into Lamina, got it back and drove forward. So I like him where he is at left wing back. There's no doubt he can play further up. He could probably play right side as well. He's one of those players that's naturally could probably play anywhere. But I'd like to see him start there on Sunday with Lamina in that similar left number 10 role.
Yeah.
Because they'll cause all sorts of problems for Coventry.
Not only that as well, if you've got Toti there and Lamina, it actually frees up.
Exactly.
It frees up Aitnori. Even if he ends up being on the halfway line, picking the ball up, going at people, when you've got that cover there, that's Mario Lamina and Toti. Not a lot of people get past them. So, yeah, absolutely. It's a great point, Dave. And I think we've got the option to play him wherever we want if we need to switch things around. But for now, I mean, you've got to feel sorry a little bit. I know he's not pretty done as well this year, but Hugo Bueno looks like, when he came on the scene last year, looked like a player. Doesn't look like that now, but and long may it continue him being out of the team. No disrespect to him. If Aitnori is playing well and keeping fit like this, tremendous footballer. Dave Butler, thanks for being part of this week's Wolves Report. Jonah's given us an absolute stinker here, but we're here for the questions as well. Jonah asks, out of Neto, Cunha, Jao Gomez, Aitnori, Hwang, who would be the biggest loss and which one would you sell? What a horrible question. Well done, Jonah. That is the stinker of the week if there's a competition. Who wants to get the ball rolling? That stinker?
I've got mine easy, but give it to Knocker first.
Knocker, director of football, has spoken.
I think the biggest loss is it's either Gomez or Cunha, isn't it? I think those are the two. I think Neto I would sell because financially he'll bring in the most revenue and he can't stay fit. You know, you're talking 5 or 6 games max and he's out injured. So I'd probably say Cunha at the moment would be the biggest loss. But it's very tight between him and Joao Gomez for me.
Ooh. I've gone the other way.
Go on.
Well, again, always the one we can't replace and we miss the most when he's not playing.
Yeah, I'm on the same page with that.
Out of them, I'd sell Hwang in a heartbeat, no problem.
I mean, there's no point in me answering the question because me and Tyler have just answered exactly the same thing. He's read my notes and he's done it. But yeah, it's a really good point on Aitnori because there's the games when he's not there, and no disrespect to Matt Doherty, I'm not expecting him to do the same job, but the people that suffer around him, Toti was not the same player with Aitnori. Wolves are not the same threat on that left-hand side of the pitch without him. So for me, Aitnori is... he's so important. And no disrespect to Joao Gomez, he's amazing. But Wolves have won without him with Tommy Doyle in there. Wolves have won without Cunha. Cunha's a huge player and I don't want him out. But Aitnori, for me, he's the one we suffer the most. Hwang, an amazing first half of the season. Incredible game away at Brentford. Since he got back from that tournament, though, he looked like the player at the end of last season. I'm not really sure whether he was carrying an injury, whether he's been fully transparent with that. I don't really know. But something doesn't seem right. Obviously, he's got injured now. But for me, yeah, Aitnori's the biggest loss. Hwang would be the one I would sell. Great questions there, Jonah. Another great question as well coming up. Trevor, I'll start this one off. This squad is not big enough for Europe. Would it be a disaster? Do you agree? Is the squad we've got now small enough for Europe? Yes, it's far too small. Would it be a disaster? No. We strive and dream of playing European football. Now, I know Chris has got some football snobbery about what European competition he wants to be in, and we're all entitled to that, but
that donkey league ain't a proper tournament. I don't care what anyone says.
And there we go. And that backs that up. But me and Knocker, yeah. I mean, idiots like us have travelled to watch Wolves. Drove up on a Wednesday night to watch Wolves and Celtic in a friendly. If you're offering me European football, no team can afford to turn that down. Now, is the squad big enough? Nowhere near. But is in the? I mean, you've seen a few of those teams. West Ham won it last year. Villa have got their quarterfinal game on Thursday against Ajax. You don't need, you need a huge squad, but it's a competition you can progress in early stages without creating a lot of damage. But would it be a disaster? No. Trevor, I dream of European football. Those nights I had in Barcelona, in Porto, I never thought I'd see Wolves doing that. And there's an opportunity to do that again. Granted, it'll be a slightly different opposition, even though Villa are playing Ajax, so there's some big teams in it. I would absolutely take it. Nocky, we'll start with a positive answer.
Yeah, look, there's a lot of dark days in football. There's a lot of horrible times where things go wrong.
Usually on that group chat.
Yeah, you get an opportunity to play in Europe, you should absolutely take it. I wouldn't care if they brought back the Anglo-Italian and we had a chance to play in Europe in that. I just want the team to be as successful as possible. So is the squad big enough? Absolutely not. But that doesn't mean I wouldn't want to have another good run at it, because there was some fantastic occasions for us. And I think if you did get into the Conference League, you've got a genuine opportunity of winning it. Because if you look at the kind of tier system, England's got the strongest... Well, in your opinion, but in the Premier League's the strongest league in the world. So you, around Europe, your top teams are going to be in the Champions League, your second tier teams are going to be in the Europa League, and then the lower ranked teams are going to be in the Conference League. But our lower ranked teams in the Conference League are going to be a lot stronger than the rest of Europe because of how strong our league is. So you've got a genuine chance to win that competition.
Well, Villa are favourites to win it this year. West Ham won it last year.
And I think Villa have got an excellent chance of winning it. An excellent chance. And you're telling me you wouldn't take your hand off to see your team win a European trophy? Oh. I'd be absolutely delighted. I'd love to see a trophy. I'd love to see a proper trophy.
It's not a European trophy. It's a made-up tournament for the last couple of years. It's not a European trophy.
There we go. We'll go back up to Mike Cannon's comment. We'll bring that back up. Mike, I hope you're a little bit more positive than last week. Well, me and Nocky have tried, Mike, but I didn't think your question was going to be
You can't finish eighth in a league, which is basically halfway up, and qualify for Europe. In my opinion, that
you right, Nocky, I'm going to mute Tyler, and we're going to talk about how much we'd love to be playing European football. And I would. And you know what? What will happen yet if we got to the final? Tyler will be coming. He won't be able to help himself. He'd hold up a sign, an apology, yeah, and he'd come on the show, read it out.
We'll be playing in the final, Wrexham.
Imagine Toti Gomez lifting the Europa League trophy, sir.
Oh, I get that. Fantastic. Get a Toti tattoo then. Trevor, thank you for your question. I know that was going to create a bit of debate, but we've watched Wolves in League One. You know what I mean? Fans who are older have watched.
At the same standards that Europa League, son. So
and we won that as well. But there'll be fans of an older generation. I know all our dads have seen Wolves win major honours. We've not. We've seen promotion, relegation. We've seen an FA Cup semi-final, European quarter-final. If there's an opportunity for Wolves to be in that competition, I am taking your arm off. But you know what? We might please Chris and win the FA Cup, and then we're playing...
Yeah, that's
we're playing the Europa League then, so you'll be happy then.
But the League One season, that was one of the best seasons. Oh, going to all them different grounds and, you know, seeing your team lift a trophy, all right, it was a League One. Some people might not think that's a big trophy to win.
It's the most important thing to us at the time. And
to see your players who work their socks off the whole season pick up a trophy, it's a fantastic thing to be a part of. I was buzzing when we won the Asia trophy as well. It's just any kind of silverware is good silverware for me.
Absolutely. Go on, Knocker, get in there. On Saturday afternoon, just after Saturday afternoon, Saturday lunchtime, Wolves play the first of the four FA Cup quarter-final games when they host Coventry City at Molineux, live on ITV. If you're not attending, I'm sure you knew that anyway, and also on BBC WM, who we're friends with on this show. It's a massive, massive opportunity. Couple of injuries out. It was never going to be easy. Wolves have to take this fully seriously. I'm sure they will be, because it is such a big game, Tyler. But Wolves cannot afford to take their foot off the gas at all. They should beat Cov, but we can't go into the game thinking, yeah, we've won that.
Oh, yeah, of course you have to take your opposition seriously. And I know Gary O'Neill will, but it would be a massive, massive disappointment to not get through this game, wouldn't it, if we're brutally honest. Yes, we're missing a whole forward line, and that's a concern, but I'd like to think there's enough about this team after what we've just talked about for the last, 54 minutes and what we saw on Saturday, to think with a pumping Molineux, you'd like to think we've got too much for Coventry, wouldn't you? No matter what team you put out, you know, I'm glass half empty as much as the next man, but I just don't see how we don't get past them on Saturday. As long as we start well and we're positive and we're on the front foot, I just don't see how we can't progress. I'll be wrong again, but I just don't see it.
The application that Wolves put in last weekend, if it's that level of commitment and desire again, surely we should be seeing Wolves at Wembley.
I mean, you'd like to think so. I don't think it's arrogant to believe you can beat a Championship side, especially when we've already beat a Championship side who are higher in the league table than Coventry. So they've got a couple of players. I mean, they've got Ellis Sims, who's been scoring a few goals. Callum O'Hare's a little bit dangerous, but man for man, we're absolutely miles ahead of them. So any system we put out should be good enough to beat Coventry. But we went to Anfield and we won when we were in the Championship. These things happen. Bigger teams have come and stuck against lower league opposition. So you've got to be switched on. You've got to match their kind of passion and work rate, and they're going to be high velocity, high intensity. They're going to bring a lot of fans. There'll be a lot of noise coming from them. So if we can match their sort of work rate, passion, and the engine that they'll bring, then the extra quality we've got should then come through. But if we're not completely switched on, if we're already looking at the semi-final, then you end up with a bit of a punch in the guts, don't you? So it's definitely ours to lose. I don't think there's any arrogance in saying that, but you've still got to turn up and do the job.
Absolutely. A couple of questions that I've from that section that I thought I'd bring on to this. Paul asked, should we keep the same side or bring in Traore and Doc?
No.
As there's no midweek game at all, I don't see any excuse other than playing strongest 11. Now,
yeah.
I know Cooney's back on the grass this week. Will he be part of there? I think we should learn our lesson from other players and how thin it is. I mean, if he's on the bench, I'll be using him only if we have to. And I don't know, he would have been training harder, would have been sprinting. He wouldn't be on the bench unless he was ready. But I understand the thinking, Paul, but Tyler, there's no... I mean, we haven't got a lot to choose from, but there's no way I'm picking anything but the strongest team available.
Yeah, the first 11 picks itself, doesn't it? I mean, you might...
Talk me through then, Tyler. Talk me through the team we talked about.
Well, I don't know. I'd be going Siren Goal, Gomez, Bueno, Kilman, Aitnori, Samedo, Gomez, Doyle, and then Lamina, high forward, Sarabia and Fraser. I think those 11 pick themselves. You've then got Bentley, Doherty, Traore, Hugo, Bueno. So you've still got to find five places on the bench, haven't you? Noah Lamina, Chirara, basically. The bench is going to be looking scarce, but that 11, I think, picks itself for me. There might be different formations and ways of playing it, but they're our best 11 players available at the moment, aren't they? They should definitely start the game.
Yeah, that to me, Nocky, I mean, I've talked about the... I think we talked about this team on the group chat as well, but that to me, it looks like, for me, a 5-1 with Doyle holding, the two in front of him, and then the two forwards. So then you can get Gomez and Lamina involved with getting Aitnori up there. I'm just bringing in the question from Carl. Who would your forward three now be, the regular three? I think it'll be a bit bespoke, Carl, to be honest, because we haven't got the three forwards. I think, as Tyler mentioned, in terms of having Mario allowing him to support on that left-hand side, how brilliant he was. We know Jao Gomez can get up there as well and support, and I want Doyle holding. That will be my thinking. Are you in agreement with that as well, Nocco?
Yeah, Chris's team is exactly my team. I wouldn't deviate away from that. There's little tweaks you could make. You could push Aitnori further forward, but
I
just think you go the areas that you can be solid, which is going to be the back three, the midfield. Yeah. I think you make that as solid as you can, and then you're supporting your kind of weaker area, which for this game is going to be the attacking third of the pitch. So I don't see why we deviate away from that. And we should, with the quality we've got in midfield, we should be able to work the spaces and work the angles to get ourselves a foothold in the game. And if we go in front, then you've got to think that we can move on for that. So yeah, no reason to deviate from that.
Carl, thanks for your question and being part of this week's show. Just one thing on the team and the setup then. It's bizarre, with losing Bellegard and Neto, that Wolves actually created more chances after they left the pitch. Now, that's not being disrespectful to those two. Me, I think that's more down, being more comfortable in the shape than the personnel. So it just shows for me that you know what? The manager's brave for going with the back four. I get it. I liked it. He's prepared to try it. It didn't work. It wasn't a disaster because he wasn't losing, but he had to tweak it because of the players that we lost. And he found another way to win. So for me, if the wing-back situation, allowing Semedo and Aitnori forward, that's Wolves' best option of winning a football match. And I think we need to keep it that way. This has been episode 92 of the Wolves Report with Chris Tyler Martinock and myself, Ryan Lester. Show's available on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Spotify. There was a Spotify twice then. Can't remember. It's prediction time for the weekend. Nocky, let's go.
I'll go 2-0 to Wolves. Fraser with the opener.
Oh, beautiful. That'll do. Tyler?
Yeah, I was going to go similar. So I'll go 1-0. I don't think we've got loads of goals in this because of the personnel, but 1-0 and Lamina, just because he's the GOAT, isn't he?
Absolutely. Well, you've gone 1-0 and 2-0. I'm over-egging it, but I can't go with this hand score, so I'm going to go 3-0 Wolves. I'm going to go with Pablo Sarabia opening the scoring. This has been episode 92 of the Wolves Report. Hopefully you'll join us to talk about Wolves reaching the FA Cup semi-final. Hopefully. Up the Wolves.